Good morning, everybody. I'm very delighted to be here. Thank you very much. I would like to share with you the results of our experiment with the British Transport Police, London Underground. I think it's a very exciting study because it broadens our understanding of hotspot policing, because most of the studies so far have been in the United States, and now we can report to you the results of an experiment conducted in the UK. In fact, it's the first... It is the first completed randomized controlled trial on hotspot policing in the UK, and is, as far as I know, the first experiment on the London on the tube system or on a railway system around the world, so it's very exciting. I shouldn't delve too much into the background of hotspot policing because Professor David Weisbrot has already talked to you about this before, but it really is central to the idea of policing that crime concentrates in very small places, and most of the crime concentrates in these very small locations around the town, around the city. And in fact, we found the same thing in London Underground, which was very interesting as well, because when we focus on the platforms, and as I'll explain to you in a moment, there are hundreds of platforms, but many of them do not see a crime at all throughout the year. And the crimes and calls for service do concentrate in very specific areas around the London Underground. And again, this is the expansion of the evidence on hotspot policing, and you see some of the scholars here, and of course the 25 studies altogether as far as we know. So we really are testing a specific hypothesis suggesting that police patrol in high volume hotspots of crimes in London Underground platforms will reduce the calls for service compared to no crime patrols at these particular hotspots. And the idea is relatively straightforward. If you see here a particular London platform, then locating the officer somewhere here in the middle, the officer will be seen and everybody will see the officer, so you can maximize deterrence and, and everybody around the platform should be able to see the officer standing over here. In terms of the settings, again, it is the first hotspot RCT in the UK. And a bit of context in terms of the London Underground, it's very, very busy. About a billion, TfL will call it a billion passengers a year, but it's actually a billion travels per year. So it's a lot of people at a very condensed geography. We are focusing our hotspot experiment on the high times because we've done some analysis before we went live, and we found that about 25% of the time, that is only 6 hours of the day, produced nearly 50% of the crime. So there's massive concentration of antisocial behavior and crime in the afternoon. So we focused our energies on these specific times, approximately between 3 to 10 o'clock at night, and mostly on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Very little crime Monday morning or Sunday afternoon. Our model is very similar to the model presented by David Weisbrot in the sense that we have a black randomized design in which we divided the different platforms into three layers: the high hotspots, the medium hotspots, and the low hotspot. The other way around. Interestingly enough, the number of crimes, the reported crimes, is very low. It is very low. I mean, for our purposes, a high hotspot would have 7 or more crimes per year. Now, that's not the number of calls for service, because we focused on the crimes and the hard crimes, if you will, because it's very difficult to know where theft happened. If somebody will steal my wallet in the underground, I cannot really know for sure if it happened on the platform or on the train or somewhere else. So in order to define the hotspots, we looked at the hard crimes, burglary, assaults, violence, and things of this sort, and we made an assumption that these will represent in many ways where crimes and calls for service are concentrated in London and London Underground. And these are the number of hotspots that we dealt with. We had another element in the design which I think is very interesting, in which we had two types of interventions. We had a solo patrol, as a one officer patrolling by himself or herself, and a double patrol with two officers patrolling together. And it took some time of convincing ourselves that that's a safe move, because you have one officer patrolling Leicester Square Friday night. It could be quite risky. But I'm happy to report that we didn't have a single report of assault on officers throughout the experiment, which has many implications in terms of spending money in patrol. Now, in terms of the dosage and the treatment, The story, again, is relatively straightforward. If I'm an officer that has ownership of these purple platforms over here, so I would be here for 15 minutes, travel to the next one for 15 minutes. Let's assume that's the next one for 15 minutes, and that's my final, the fourth one, for 15 minutes, and I do it four times during the shift. So you're talking about additional patrol of about an hour each shift. And it's very important because the usual course of business doesn't have that additional patrol, and it's a major advancement in terms of the number of patrolling hours that you have throughout this experimental period. In fact, we had assigned 23,000 visits to these hotspots. It's a lot of visits. And of these, about 94% of them met the time of 15 minutes, give or take 6 minutes. Interestingly enough, the 94% that you see here also takes into account some tube stations that were closed, or engineering work, or riots, or whatever that may be. So actually, it could be that this ratio is even higher. And you can see a graphic depiction over here with the delta that is the difference between the assigned time, the 15 minutes, and the actual number of minutes that officers were at the scene. We have minute-by-minute recording of every single officer out there, exactly where they are, when they are, to the minute. We also record how many sandwiches they had, so we can calculate the cost-benefit analysis as well. It's very important. These things are not cheap. One of the major findings that we have is, in fact, on the calls for service, and that's what we'll focus on today. We found 21% reduction in calls for service in this 6 months, and in the total number of calls throughout this period, it's about 1,100 less calls for service in the experimental hotspots compared to the control. That's a massive reduction in the number of calls for service, which of course frees the force to do other things as well, and of course less incidents occur as well. And these are the types of events or incidents, sorry, that the officers were able to reduce. Massive reduction in antisocial behavior. We have a reduction in robbery, although the numbers are quite low. Theft is interesting because it wasn't our aim. We weren't trying to reduce theft because that wasn't one of the variables that we calculated in the definition of a hotspot for the reasons I've mentioned before. It's very difficult to pinpoint exactly where theft is happening. So there was some increase in the high hotspots. So it's difficult to know now whether that's displacement or not. It's difficult to measure this. But if you look at the low hotspots and the medium hotspots, that's a serious reduction in theft as well, and also a reduction in violence, a pretty interesting reduction in violence as well. We've done some statistical analysis in which we've compared the experimental and the control. This type of analysis is called difference in differences approach, in which you take the calls for service in the 6 months previous to the experiment, and you use that as a controlling element for the effect of the intervention. So you take the number of calls for service in the experimental minus the number of in the experimental period minus the number of calls for service in the before period. And then you compare these two numbers between the experimental and the control. So what you're seeing here is a low-level block. And again, that's the block that's a low-level block. So you have some reduction, but I can tell that it's not statistically significant. And if you look at the middle level, then you also have some reduction as well. And you can see here the total number of calls in the post random assignment stage or during the experimental stage, and that's a serious reduction. But if you take into account the number of calls for service in the period before, then this reduction is not statistically significant. If the major finding is this one, in the differences in the calls for service in the high-level blocks. So it's very similar to what Professor David Weisberg just presented, and it comes back to previous literature that your best buck for your money is actually to focus on the high crimes rather than the low high crimes. And if you like statistics, then that's the graph that will show you the statistical analysis in terms of the effect sizes. I shouldn't delve too much into it, but just so you know that, first of all our students here already know what a forest plot is, and they learn to love it. And anything to the left of this line over here would suggest that you have less calls for service in the experimental hotspot, and anything to the right of this line would mean that you have less calls for service in the control area. So overall, you can see that all these three dots are on the side of less calls for service in the experimental area. So the general trend does show, the general pattern does show that you have a decrease in calls for service because of the intervention, and the biggest effect that you find is actually in the high crimes. Now, we were concerned that perhaps the experiment or the intervention has led people to report less, either because they see the officers in the scene, so they decide not to call the police because somebody's already out there, or maybe there are some staff of the railway staff will call more or less because they see more officers at the scene. And interestingly enough, when you compare the sources of the calls, you actually see no real difference between the experimental and the control. No real difference. There's some reduction here in the experimental compared to the control, but it's not statistically significant. We've also conducted a survey, a Justice Tankebe survey, of self-legitimacy of the officers, and to ask them about some of the questions that you've raised before about is it sustainable? Do you think it's something that we could push and do further in the future? Do you like the idea of evidence-based policing and hotspot policing? Because it's very important to get some notion of, from the officers who are doing the patrol, do you think it's sustainable or not? So we had about 60% response rate. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. It's still, you can get a lot of information in some sense about these questions, and you can see in front of you what kind of officers did the patrols. And these are some of the answers. The legitimacy questionnaire is quite extensive, and that's just a selection of some of the questions that are relevant to evidence-based policing. And, for example, I'm not worried that hotspot policing will lead to more crimes. Most of them would agree to that. I find the idea of hotspot policing to be useful. 60% of them said yes. Only 18% of them said no. Pretty much the same rates in terms of hotspot policing makes patrolling much harder. I thought that would be actually a different rate altogether because it is much more difficult for the officers because it's different. They're timed a lot. They have to. We don't have a GPS locator on the London Underground at the moment, and it's difficult for everybody to actually record the number of minutes that you are at the scene or not. So we had two sergeants at the beginning and then somebody dedicated just to do this task. So it was very, very laborious, very, very difficult. So we thought that officers will say that it's very difficult to maintain, and actually we didn't get that result. A little bit of cost-benefit analysis. There are different ways of analyzing the cost and the benefits of the experiment. Altogether, the experiment from the police side cost about 220,000 pounds. But that's actually the cost of the patrol itself. So it's not additional cost of the experiment, it's what the patrol would cost. So the specific costs associated with the hotspot patrols were about 10,000 pounds. So there are two different ways of actually assessing how much this experiment costs and what the benefits are. So if you take a conservative approach, I guess, so you spend about 200 pounds to prevent one call for service. And if you take a more liberal approach, I guess, then you spend only 8 pounds to prevent one call for service. So that puts in perspective what are the benefits of hotspot patrolling. Some of the challenges and the possible solutions that we can consider. The first one, again, that came directly from the police, who said that it's very expensive to manually account for officers present at the hotspots. Now, if it was above the ground, then we have possible solutions because you have the GPS locators. And in fact, we are considering doing something like this in the very near future, in which every single officer in a particular LPU would have a smartphone that will have both a GPS and a Wi-Fi locator that you will know at any moment and every single shift all the time where the officers are as opposed to the cars. So that's something that we can consider, something that we can solve. In terms of the London Underground, now many of the tube stations are, in fact, Wi-Fi enabled. So perhaps in the future we will be able to deploy officers based on GPS locators as well. The other question is whether a static approach to defining the hotspots does not take into account the temporal changes, because although David Weisbord and others find that there isn't much of a temporal change across time, some incidents are more likely to happen in the United Kingdom than in the summertime than they are in the wintertime. For example, antisocial behavior. It's higher during the summertime than it is in the wintertime. So if your hotspot is primarily ASB, antisocial behavior, then perhaps a static approach to defining it is something that you can reconsider. The other question is whether ring fence recruitment whether that is something that it's sustainable. Because taking officers, 20 officers at a time, like we've done for this experiment, 20 officers every month on a rolling roster, was very difficult, was very challenging. The London Underground BTP officers told me that's one of the major concerns. How do you actually get people on board all the time like this on a rolling roster? And it's not that easy. So one possible solution is to have the entire force in the LPU or the area readily available to do this sort of hotspot policing. Fourth point is whether we can do double patrols or single patrols. And I think the experiment gives an interesting answer to this question in the sense that you can do single patrols. Because even at high hotspots, you do not have additional risk to single patrol officers because we don't have evidence to suggest that we have more assaults on officers who are patrolling by themselves. And in terms of money resources in an age of austerity, that's an important finding. And lastly, I think it's crucial to consider that the analysts out there are very important. They're the ones who can dish out to the commanders exactly where the hotspots are mushrooming and what the problems are and whether there are particular problems that are coming up. And the intelligence / analysts, they're the ones that can give this kind of information. So for the experiment and as a general comment, we found them very, very useful. This is it. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Mark Newton, as said, from the British Transport Police. I was actually sat amongst you a couple of years ago. Thought, that's interesting. How is this going to help me? Gave it a little bit of thought, reflection, and then, as stated, made the approach. We have had an interesting journey over the last sort of year around actually implementing this. And I think we surprisingly agreed on most things. I think the biggest debate that we had around implementation of this was a debate around the name. Barrett wanted to call it Operation Sunflower, I think, and we decided on Operation Beck because it's named after Harry Beck, who designed the underground map. I just wanted to share just a few sort of comments, a few experiences with you around how, from the operational context, this worked, what it actually meant on the ground. And I think the first thing to say was, it was the policing of the underground is an interesting policing challenge. About 4 million passenger journeys per day, sort of growing and growing all of the time. A surprisingly low crime and cool environment. It's an extremely safe environment. So to conduct an experiment of this nature was a challenge because some of the hotspots had particularly low values to them. However, we're continually trying to push the envelope around policing, trying to achieve reductions, trying to achieve value for money. And we heard about what the police minister was talking about this morning. And I think this experiment was an opportunity to explore whether there was a different way of doing business. The officers that we utilised, they would have been patrolling anyway. This wasn't a different, an additionality, if you like. This was just utilising officers and staff in a way that was better informed and with a mission. One of the important areas that we covered off at the beginning of the experiment was to ensure that the team were engaged. To have an officer patrolling effectively a patrol pattern on the London Underground system and asking them to remain visible on platforms for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, etc. That's an interesting challenge for those police leaders amongst us to actually have staff adhere to that. And you've heard we achieved it in an amazing amount of times, 23,000 I think were the actual locations we policed. And the way we achieved that was actually get them engaged and explain it and to ensure that they understood the value of what they were doing. And Cambridge helped massively with that, for which we're grateful, because I don't think the experiment would have worked otherwise. We would have had a lot less success around achieving the hotspot patrols that we wanted. The other thing that we were very fortunate with in this experiment was a great partnership with Transport for London. There are representatives here today, but we enjoy a really good partnership with Transport for London, and they encourage us, encourage policing and the partnership that we have to try new things. So we're talking about risk of failure. Well, we didn't know this was going to work. We had an inkling that this could work, but it was a risk. And I took that risk, but with a reasonable amount of top cover, I have to say, and support from both the organisation I work for as well as Transport for London. So really important to achieve those good partnerships. So good team, good leadership, fantastic partnership, and a determination to see it through. Because this was a long haul experiment. We were putting officers on permanent late turns, effectively. And we had to convince them of stepping outside of regulations and all of the sort of people issues you would expect. But we achieved that because of the culmination of those things I've talked about. We desire to achieve this greater value for money. We wanted to test out whether single patrol patterns would have as much impact, and we've looked at that, and I think we have proven that. We, of course, can't just do everything this way going forward. It's interesting where we're going to end with this, and I'll perhaps touch on that in a moment. But there are locations across the underground system that have no crime whatsoever on a regular basis. But staff, passengers, our community expect to see us. We can't just disappear from those locations because it is a low-crime environment. So this isn't the only answer for me. I think this is one of the tools in the bag that we can now utilise with certainty around the evidence and the provability of the theory that it works. But it's not the only answer. It's one that we will utilise going forward. Going forward from here, some challenges touched upon, really. We only patrolled areas that the hard crimes were identifiable. 50% of the crime on London Underground is pickpocketing. We don't know where that takes place, apart from where we make the arrest. It's a covert crime, and as such, it's difficult to actually nail that location down, particularly when on a moving train. So there's an interesting... the next sort of challenge I think we face is how we nail that. We're doing some interesting stuff around that with other academics. In terms of the hard crime patrols, I think they're moving forward. This provides us with great evidence that this works. It's a reduction in calls. It's a reduction in crime. This is transferable, we think, to other mass transit systems. This has never been tried, to our knowledge, across the world. And so we are talking to colleagues in similar policing teams that have challenges of this nature across the world, with a view to taking this forward as best practice. We're looking to implement a pattern of patrols that replicate the experiment moving forward just after the Olympics. We've got a bit of a challenge during the Olympic period, you'll understand, so we're not going to press the button on it until afterwards. But once the sports day's over, we will we'll be doing some we're doing some work around this and to implement this. So I just wanted to thank Cambridge and my team who sat at the back there, who worked very well together, delivered this, as I said, really good support from our partners in Transport for London. So I'm happy to take any questions if there are. Thank you.